This is Coaches to the Moon, the only podcast you need to skyrocket your coaching business and create true impact on the world. Here's your host, Alex Morris.
Welcome back to Coaches to the Moon, everybody. It is a fantastic day here in Sydney because we're being joined by Nikki Sachs, best-selling author, coach, model, still a model? Sometimes.
Not in Sydney.
Still a model, best-selling author of the book Hiding in the Open, Living Sensitively, here to talk to us today about her own mental health journey, how she has succeeded through the challenges of living with borderline personality disorder, and also how you out there, if you are suffering or struggling with your own mental wellness issues, can take Nikki's story, Nikki's journey, and approach those challenges to get through them and create your own life of success. So Nikki, once again, from Cape Town, South Africa, now living in Bondi Beach in Sydney. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much for having me.
Excellent.
I watched this.
Good. Me too. You're in between Pilates and gym classes. I'm off the back of 3 hours of taking my toddlers to the playground and being like, girls, we got to go. And I've got sand all over my feet and I've just shoved some breakfast down. We're in it together.
Sometimes that's way more difficult than doing a Pilates class, looking after three girls, I'm sure, in the playground.
Far out. Two twin three-year-old daughters. And hence why we're charging the unicorn nightlight, hence why I have a tambourine on my desk. And,
they say it's the bad guys that get girls, huh? And you got a double whammy with the twins.
Double whammy. Girl dad. I think I needed it. It's been great so far. Yeah. But the rainier
children.
100%. And it's something that is actually relatively serendipitous today, Nikki, because one of my daughters is very, very sensitive. And we've been learning this recently, that she really struggles with an overwhelming day or with a day when she's been at kindy, she comes back and maybe has a tantrum in the car on the way home, struggles with parties. If we go and try and pack too much stuff in, then she's having a bad evening. And until recently, we thought that was a behavioral thing and that she needs to be kind of shown that that's not okay. But we're learning slowly that she's probably highly sensitive. And I noticed that 100%. She finds some sounds too loud, some smells too smelly, hates, if she's having a real gnarly meltdown, she'll take her clothes off, hates being in her car seat. And so I just noticed that your book being called Living Sensitively, I'm just wondering, are there any parallels between what we're experiencing with Ollie and your life with borderline personality disorder?
Absolutely. Everything really? You mentioned is like mini me. Absolutely.
Okay.
Part of the borderline personality thing is a huge area of sensitivity, emotional sensitivity. That really does kind of define the disorder, as we spoke earlier. Maybe I'll just say borderline. That just defines borderline. But one of the things I actually touch on in my book is highly sensitive people. And everything you spoke about, it's sensitivity to light, sensitivity to fabrics, certain things you have in your skin. So for me, labels always annoy me. Being overwhelmed in public by people, everything, heat, too hot, too cold, just it's the overwhelming, it's a sensitivity to everything. So, and it's so difficult, especially for a young child, and I'm sure if you've got two of them, to be able to see how the one is okay and the other is super sensitive. And there's desensitizing ways that you can make your daughter kind of less prone to those kind of outbursts and things like that. And I'm sure you'll get guidance on that. But it's definitely the sounds. There's actually a quiz that I put in my book for highly sensitive people to see. So the thing about living sensitively is that to firstly understand that it is what it is. You know, it is the case that I'm sensitive to whole things. I'm even sensitive. There's something called misophonia, which when I talk about this, most people know what I'm talking about. If somebody eats too loud or if somebody gulps their water or whatever, it just, you see, everyone's got that like inbuilt kind of thing. A lot of that, I mean, this is going, we're kind of going ahead, but a lot of that is built on is on trauma. So it's a fight or flight release, and what it does is it makes us very sensitive to certain things. So if you hear something that you don't agree with, you tend to it annoys you. It can get to a point where it annoys you. So it's all, my book is about trauma. It's about how my world and what I experienced, and I quote this a couple times in my book, it's not whether it's better or worse or whatever than any, but it's my experience, and it's what led up to the point where I was diagnosed with borderline personality disorder. So it's my experience on all these sensitivities. It's on, I was diagnosed with ADHD, I was diagnosed, diagnosis, not for highly sensitive people, it's not a diagnosis, but I had codependency, there's a whole bunch. So I touch on all of those aspects in the book. And 2017, 18, I was diagnosed, I was told that I had borderline personality disorder. So it kind of meant that all the stuff that I'd been experiencing made sense. It kind of made sense. Suddenly, the sensitivities, the emotional stuff, the emotional dysregulation is what it, dysregulation is what it's about. So it all kind of made sense. And being highly sensitive is both positive and negative. Because I'm sure you notice with your daughter, she's got huge compassion and empathy. She loves animals, probably beautiful, creative things. So there's a massive upside to it as well.
Totally. Yeah, okay. That's super interesting. All right. So that's great that you've been living with this for a very long time and then only received your official diagnosis quite recently. It's funny how just having a diagnosis can be so helpful. Right? Like, because when you go to a GP, they're not making you better in the room, but they're saying, okay, your daughter's a mess because she has an ear infection. It's like, oh shit, okay, we can do that. We can deal with an ear infection. And the same with my other daughter, Ollie, we took her to a child therapist because she was having these gnarly tantrums all the time. And one time she ran away in a car park and we're like, okay, this needs to stop. Let's get her checked out. And she goes, Does she ever get really annoyed if there's sand in her shoes or if her socks are crumpled up or if something's too loud? We're like, yeah, she does. She goes, And she went down that path and we found it. And that diagnosis has been huge for us because now we know what we're up against. And so how has your life and approach changed since being told officially this is what you're dealing with?
So I've realized with any mental wellness is that one needs to accept what is. When I first found out about my condition, I went onto Google as one does, and what I saw was absolutely horrific. It made me out to sound like I was uncaring, unfeeling, narcissist and it wasn't. So what I had to do is firstly come to terms with the fact that that's not who I am. I know that I have good things and bad things about me, but I had to understand that from the trauma that I had experienced growing up, it had led me to this point where I needed to find a way to navigate that. And there is a plan that I have in place which I have to live by every single day, and if I deviate off that, then I start getting overwhelmed, becoming too sensitive emotionally and otherwise. And then it doesn't benefit me at all. So there's certain things. Mindfulness practice is one which is a huge. There's something called dialectical behavioral therapy, which I'm actually studying, and I hope to. That did a huge amount for me. And what it is really is it's a mindfulness-based practice where you learn to accept certain things and change other things. So emotional regulation, distress tolerance, things like that you learn through this practice, there's just certain things that I need to do every single day in order to be okay.
Okay, great.
I think, yeah.
Because you mentioned that, yeah, there's a certain sort of plan and structure you have to follow, and if that doesn't happen, you're overwhelmed. And then I also know that you run a small business. And so that's a relatively disparate thing. A small business, everything can just hit the fan in a second. Yeah. And so running your your wellness coaching, your mental health coaching business, how are you setting up your days to deal with the fact that you kind of need it to be a certain structure for you to thrive?
It's a very good question. And we spoke about earlier how it is difficult as a business owner of a small business, and you're sitting at home and you have no interaction, and you know that could be days on end besides your family, which could be stressful. There's that in the business, and you know, how does that impact on your mind? It has a massive impact in the long term. So I've realized a few things. Number one is that I have to get between 7 and 8 hours sleep a night. I have to have movement. I have to be doing something every day, and my body has been through a lot. So as you know, as one gets older, so I've also realized that I can't push it the way that I used to. I've had to come to terms with the fact that I have to honor my body in a way that I don't want to hurt it anymore. Because before I would just smash it in order to compensate for other things. So exercise. I also find that I've had to be very, very strict on who I allow into my world. I've had to detox so many people, and it's so difficult to do because firstly we all want to be liked, we want to we want people to like us, and I just find there were so many people that were Brené Brown, she's my guru, who says candle putter outers. You know, you're this like amazing flame, and you have these people that just want to put your flame out all the time because they. So I avoid a lot of toxic people, and navigating that has been tough because sometimes toxic people could be family or friends. But you know, your space and your wellness is far more important than any relationship that you feel might be compromised in a certain way. I also find that I need to connect with nature. Mm-hmm. I need to be very, very mindful of the foods and the drinks that I have. Because it all, you know, alcohol makes you sensitive and then it can depress you. Those sort of things. So one has to be very mindful of certain behaviors.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's super interesting. Because, I mean, everything you've said, none of that's mind-blowing stuff, right?
No.
Sleep, move, eat, get into nature, normal stuff. Very, very, once again, difficult when you do have the business, or if you're working full time, if you have kids or you don't have kids. There's a lot of reasons why people don't manage to do those things. For yourself, making them non-negotiables, and I'm exactly the same. My wife, yeah. You know, if we're on a Saturday and I've been up since 6 with the girls and it's a slow Saturday morning and it's sort of 8:45, 9 a.m., she's like, okay, we need to get you outside. It's not about the girl. It's like we need to take you for a walk because I get antsy and I really struggle to do a straight day of, you know, I can't wake up, hit the computer straight away. I need to go and put my feet in some water, that sort of thing. So I love that. And I hope you don't mind me asking this question, Nikki. You've mentioned some trauma and you've also mentioned my body's been through a lot. Is there a story there that we should get into, or is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a few things about borderline personality, and the main thing about it is it's when it relates to relationships. So, so for instance, there's a quote. You know, if somebody with schizophrenia had to go and be on an island by themselves, their condition would be very apparent because of this. But if you had to put somebody with borderline on an island by themselves, you wouldn't notice that there's anything wrong with them. Because it's only when it comes into relationships. So that being said, the biggest fear of a borderline is being rejected or being abandoned in some way. So in order for that to be achieved, I always had to be perfect. I thought I always had to make sure that I was perfect on the outside, on the inside, a perfect human being, because if I maintained that, then nobody could reject me. Nobody would abandon me. Nobody would leave me. I would be lovable. I would be enough. So I find myself pushing myself to the point where I've had to have back fusions and things like that because I pushed myself so hard at exercise. I was exercising 3 hours a day, doing runs, doing mountains, doing whatever. And because I found I had to be perfect. And that's partly why the name of my book is called Hiding in the Open, because for so long I was hiding in the open. I was pretending to be something that I wasn't. So how does somebody become borderline? The same way I suppose somebody would get post-traumatic stress or go through something like that, it's trauma. It's trauma-based. I grew up in a dysfunctional home that was abusive. And so my whole perspective on the world was scary. My mere existence was, I questioned. And so it really did lead to this bad coping mechanisms of, if I was perfect, if I was okay, then I would be accepted and loved. So I just, yeah, I really, really have pushed my body. You know, I met this triathlete once and he said to me, "Your body's in worse condition than mine is, and I train every single day for triathletes." But you know what? It's just one way that I've realized was like self-harm, you know, over the years. And I think we all find ways to self-harm in a way.
Well, that whole feeling of, if I am X, then I will be happy, or then I will be loved. That is, I mean, the coaching space is just so full of that, because so many people get into these businesses because they've had an experience that they've gotten through. And a lot of people are just basically coaching an earlier version of themselves through what they've already, the path they've already walked. And so for you to do that, I get it. I do it too. I've got three, you know, wife and two little daughters in my house. So when I had the girls, I went hyper masculine, you know, and before that, you know, I was a bit of a punk rocker, you know. I kind of wore some, you know, questionable things and whatever. These days I'm freaking, you know, I'm filling my backpack. Yeah, I'm such a dad, but I'm like, I've gone hyper. I better be stronger. I better be, you know, I better know first aid and know how to chop wood and how to like fire a gun and all these things that you don't necessarily need to do in suburban Narrabeen. But for me,
put ourselves under so much pressure.
100%. You know, if I am X, then I'll be loved or happy or successful, or when I get to there. So I get it. I get it, Nikki Sachs. We're all dealing with our own shit in a big way. And I think the coaching space, messy.
But you know what? We're all not living now. We're living in the future, which can only create anxiety. And if we live in the past, it creates depression. I mean, there's no ways that you can look back without regret. So what you're talking about as well, you know, firstly with the dad thing, I think maybe a lot to do with, it's a protective thing. It's what happens is you step up because now it's not just about you. And that comes with a whole bunch of other pressure as well, you know, that comes with a whole bunch of things that you've never experienced before. So it's how to navigate the space and think. And as you say, I mean, I think that's the question that we all ask ourselves. I don't believe anybody has escaped trauma, loss or grief or anything in whatever way, shape or form that is. So it's trying to just come to terms with the fact that, you know, you have to live now, and you have to be very present in your existence. Does that sound a bit all fairy-fairy?
No, not at all. Not at all. It makes tremendous amount of sense now, more so than ever, when
this device in our hands, this phone, has the ability to remove us from the present non-stop.
Yeah, and that's another one of my things that I had to stop was social media. So if anybody looks at my social media page, they'll see that there's like big gaps. It doesn't serve anybody, you know. I think that if anything, it just, we're just such instant gratification people. We want things now. We want, you know, so that cell phones and things are just a curse.
So how are you, you're running a coaching business, coaching, you know, every coach I know, for the most part, we're doing it through social media, through ads, through websites. You're doing a lot of podcasts. Yeah. How are you getting yourself out there, Nikki? How are you managing to balance social media and your, you know, need?
Well,
to be-
as I said, it's also, I've just moved to Sydney, so I've been here for 6 months, just getting myself settled. There's a whole bunch of legal red tape that I have to go through before I can, so you know, really set up here. So I have everything running. I have people that I coach from South Africa that I still have that connect with me, probably on a twice monthly, you know, fortnightly basis. But I have a website where anybody can reach out to me and we can start a conversation. That's NikkiSachs.com. I do have social media set up. I occasionally post a podcast or something that I've done, or a question or some breathing techniques, you know, for mindfulness or whatever. And so, yes, there is access. I have my book, which is available, you know, which I spoke about on Amazon, and it's, people can reach out to me. And I've had a few people that have read my book and actually started, we've started coaching that way.
Great, great. So it's kind of, you're doing what you need to do.
Definitely.
Not living on that. And that is a problem. Very easy for us to say, no, I'm working. I am working, but you're not working. You are struggling, you liar. And it can be very, very, very tricky. I've got as the business owner now, I've got a team of 5 or 6 people plus sales agency plus, you know, a few dozen clients, and everyone's trying to reach you on the phone.
Yeah.
I can't escape from it too much, except for when I set the boundary at sort of 8 p.m. and just kind of, you know, airplane mode the phone. For my team, if they work after hours and sort of message me, I kind of have to pull them up on it. Or if they message me on social media and ask me about something, I have to be like, dude, I don't want you to be stuck in work when you're not working, because I need you working when you're working. I need you good. And your family needs you good when you're not there. And it's very, I'm still fighting that battle for myself all the time. But I think it is possible, even though you've got, and this is career people as well. They've got a phone in their pocket. Their boss is there. Microsoft Teams, fucking Gmail. Excuse my language, Nikki. Oh, God.
Ever use the word Gmail again. No, I'm joking. And, you know, talking about that, because as you said, you know, from a small business point of view, and you hit on something that I want to draw attention to, and that is boundaries. So, I mean, you shared some information with me when we first started speaking about the rough time that you had at the end of last year, the beginning of this. And, you know, that's why I was saying to you, we need to, as small business owners, we have to be honest with ourselves, because your business cannot succeed if you are not well. It's like, you know, they say if the airplane's going down, make sure that you put your oxygen mask on before you help anybody else. So you have to be well. And in order to be well, you have to set boundaries. So a lot of the time what happens is people get to a point, don't they, where it's all like crash and burn before they say, hang on, something's wrong. I need to do it differently. And I'm suggesting that there is a way, and especially coaches, because we all think we have to know all the answers. We think we all have to be doing it right. And we all have to, you know, and it's not like that. It's certainly not like that for me. I arrived here and it was a shit show. And, you know, you have to pull on all your resources. But at the end of the day, you're human, you know, and stuff happens. But, I think that one has to draw the line and say, if I'm going to succeed, then I need to be well. And the way that I'm well is I need to set very, very clear boundaries with myself, for myself, and with others. And I think that's important to understand. You know, as you said, don't contact me after a certain time. A lot of the time as well, we sit on the phone as business owners, scrolling at competition and feeling so much worse about ourselves, because we think that they've got a better thing than we, or better way of doing it, or whatever. And at the end of the day, you know, we've got to rely on us. And the best way to do that is to know who you are and put a boundary in place so that you understand that people understand who you are.
100%. And what you touched on about in the coaching space, we think we need to be perfect. And I mean, everyone's projecting that. All the coaches are sharing their perfect day and their perfect business and their car and their another day at the office with their laptop in a pool, that sort of nonsense. And definitely you're attracting some sort of freedom chasers when you do that. People who think that their life sucks compared to yours. But the more I've been running social media-based businesses for, like, I don't know, 8-9 years now. The more honest you are, definitely the more trust you build, the more people you attract into your business. And the conversations, you know, with clients are just so, or prospects are so simple. When, you know, you're sharing stuff. If I do a call, a sales call, and one of my toddlers walks into the room, I've got so much more rapport than some guy who's just got his background on and just, you know, pretending, like flashing his Stripe screenshots about how much money he makes. And that's just my experience has been that authenticity has been huge. But for yourself, you mentioned that for a long time you were really under the surface struggling, that kind of duck metaphor.
Yeah, that's exactly. I use that in my book, the little duck and then the feet under the water going like this. Yeah. You know, I mean, you touched on authenticity, and that goes hand in hand with vulnerability. And as I said, you know, Brené Brown being one of the gurus that I've really learned a lot from. But I find in work or whatever, if you lean in, if you show a little bit of your underbelly and you kind of show a little bit of your, your vulnerability, people will meet you there. So a lot of the time, I lean into the conversations that are difficult. I ask the hard questions. I do the things that are not easy. And I show up, you know, a lot of the posts that I have done of when I'm struggling. And I say, this is happening and this is how I'm feeling today. And, you know, like, I'm not one of those people that says, listen, it's going to be happy all the time. I'm one of those people that says it's going to be happy because you make it that way most of the time. I think that, being authentic is critical in a business and critical for survival of a business.
Yeah. Because you definitely... You see it so much you see it with celebrities, I suppose. And a celebrity is a personal brand and they're a business. And you hear all the time that, oh, Justin Bieber's checked himself into rehab for the 14th time. Poor guy. Because outwardly, it looks like, for the most part, the best life ever. But, and they keep living that and showing up as that. And the pressure just mounts and mounts until it's got to go somewhere. A little bit like this metaphor we were giving that I'm sure you can relate with, of when if my daughter's having a dinner meltdown about how much spaghetti she's got compared to her sister, it's not usually about that. It's about she's been holding in emotions all day at kindy, and then she's home, she's safe to let it out, and it blows up rather than letting them out in kind of healthy amounts as you go. And so I think that we're actually moving in that trend now where you are getting celebrities, big personal brands sharing little bits of vulnerability, massively increasing their market share by doing so. But we're not seeing the Macaulay Culkins anymore. You know, the people going completely, Lindsay Lohan going completely off the rails, because people are actually opening up a little more, not they're hiding in the open.
Yeah, they're having conversations about it and it's making them real. And I quote a number of actors that have come clean. There's a chapter in my book called Coming Clean. Their vulnerability will really hopefully decrease the stigma on what mental wellness is, because it really is something that affects every single one of us in some way or the other, every single one of us. And it is what it is. I think that we need to just accept that. I personally think that all of us are suffering from PTSD because after COVID, you know, everybody was in a state for 2 years where they thought they were going to die every single day. So the amount of stress that comes with and the amount of the knock-on effect. So if you have a predisposition to anxiety or something, and then you put that on top of it, it just explodes. And if you can't have conversations about your struggles with people, then that's all internalized, which brings me to another topic, which is, on suicide and things and how that is, because I'm working with Lifeline, and how that is just becoming, it's overwhelming. It's overwhelming, how prevalent that's becoming, and especially with men. Because they have this stoic kind of perception that they need to be strong and they can't talk about these things, the vulnerabilities.
Mm-hmm. Don't be a bitch, bro. Deal with it. Yeah.
Yeah. Cowboys can't cry.
Yeah. Your wife doesn't want to see you, she wants to see you showing up, protecting. James Bond style,
Yeah, I think that women also have been pretty unfair when it comes to men, because they've kind of needed rescuing a lot, which means that the men have to always kind of fix things. But I think that conversations are changing. Certainly amongst people that I know, I don't know whether they're only that way when they're around me, but they people's conversations are, it's different, and it's beneficial. I mean, we can all, because there's such judgment around and stigmas, aren't there, around this kind of stuff. And I've just also come to terms with the fact that if people want to say that I'm loco or I'm whatever, you know, then it kind of is what it is. But I also know, on the other hand, that I'm helping a lot of people, and that makes me feel good.
Well, Nikki, I can say confidently that you're completely off your rocker, and I love that. Otherwise,
if you spotted, you got it, right?
Yeah, you wouldn't have started a small business. You wouldn't be.
I'm a serial entrepreneur as well. Yeah. I mean, before this, I was doing, and I'm sure like you. You either make a decision early on in your life that you can't work for a corporate business, and that, you know, I found that I couldn't be creative enough, and I couldn't anyway. So yeah, serial entrepreneur, and you have to keep making sure that you're okay, you know, along the way.
How do you go with being told what to do? How do you go with rules and stuff? You've got lots of structures for yourself that you need to follow. How do you go with, for example, the amount of authority that we suddenly had to follow daily during the pandemic, or like in high school, how did you go? Or when you have worked in proper jobs, do you deal well with more structure or go against it?
I deal with my own structure. I find people, so I've worked out also that being a highly sensitive person, I can't work in a very stressful environment. And I made that decision a long time ago, before I even knew about HSP. So I can't work in an environment like that. I could never understand at school why I was always overwhelmed, in class and whatever. So I've had to I forgot the question you're asking me.
How do you go with structure, with authority, and rules?
Right. Okay. And rules. So, being in Australia has been fun. I'm pretty flexible now. I was a lot less flexible when I was in the past. Now I understand the reason for it. Before, I would fight it because I always thought I knew better. Things have changed with age and maturity and some wisdom. If I'm in a tough situation, like now in a day, I really do draw on, and I keep going back to this because people think it's all frilly. Mindfulness is the only way that you can really grab the moment and be okay in it. So I tend to lean on that a lot, and certain strategies on being able to be present, not let things affect me as much, and just manage things better because I'm in control.
Yeah. Okay. Talk me through it a bit then. So we're having a rough day. We're feeling like morning's been tough. There's been traffic. You had a shit workout. You've got a call in 20 minutes and you're rushing towards the call and you spilled a coffee. How do you get yourself back on track so you can actually perform at your best?
Stop.
Okay.
Stop. There's SOS. Stop. You observe what's going on and you steer. So, and it's weird because it's like an energy thing, in my opinion. It's like almost the law of attraction. If things start going badly, it kind of seems like it's going to actually carry on going badly. It just kind of happens. But I have to, I stop and I say, okay, let's get a hold of what's going on. I have conversations with myself all the time. What is going on here? What can I control? What can I not control? Let's focus on what we're doing right now. Let's breathe, because I often forget to breathe. But it's, again, if it's a tough day and you need to just go and smack a wall or something, one is compelled to try and do that. I just feel I get really overwhelmed. And so I need to stop. I need to breathe. I need to pause. And I need to also just say to myself, right now in the moment, it's okay. It's okay. And being honest, the thing that trips us up a lot of the time is perfectionism. Mm. So, doing the gym, it doesn't have to be perfect. And I have to say that to myself often, this is okay. It's okay. Today, I didn't sleep well last night. So I'm not feeling that strong at gym, so I'll just walk on the treadmill. And now I've got this call to make and I'm rushing because of the traffic, But, you know, if I say to them, listen, I've just been rushing to get to the traffic to be here. So, you know, give me a moment to catch. It's just being transparent, I think, is also really helpful.
What lovely, sensible, normal advice.
So, I did say smack a wall. I haven't done that in a long time.
Well, it's refreshing to hear it because, and, you know, you're not the first episode for me to say this. The coaching space is just so full of what I consider to be just not nonsense, but just ideas that are so contextual and they work in the moment for some people with certain lives, you know, and one cannot always align to their true purpose, you know, when you're, you know, you can't always breathe deep into your anal chakra or whatever it is that they say. Mm. You can't always do that. Stop, breathe, be honest with your client that you're having you're rushing this morning. How good? Yeah. How good? Yeah. You know, makes such a lot of sense. And if you do need to, you know, get physical by going for a run or a walk, I chuck some weights in my backpack and go for a, you know, a sweaty walk. I think it's just cool. It's just cool advice because, like you mentioned earlier on, you transitioned from wellness coaching through to sort of more mental health coaching without the qualifications to do so, which is something we talk about a lot on this show, which is the difference between university certified thing on the wall saying, here's what I can do versus just going through lived experience.
Yeah.
And while you may not have the same level of employability, or you can't prescribe medication, obviously sometimes you can absolutely have a better effect because you've actually been there yourself.
And I think that's the key thing that's on point. And that is about the school of hard knocks as opposed to, you know, having a degree. There's a number of certifications that I'm sure, you know, you've got as well. But
doubt it.
But I just find that, what did you say? Part-time chef.
Yeah, I'm a qualified chef. It's the only piece of paper I've got. Yeah.
That is really cool.
Yeah, that's what I did that for 10 years before I started marketing. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That is so cool. I love cooking too. Right. But, you know, the other thing that you touched on, which I wanted to mention was, you know, there's all these coping mechanisms. And as coaches, we like to be able to offer some kind of structure and working kind of methodology to kind of getting to where you want to be and all that kind of stuff. But I have also, again, mentioned in my book about medication and how, you know, there's no need to really struggle alone because a lot of the time people are very reluctant to get help in that area because they think that is a sign of weakness as well. But a lot of the time, an anxiety disorder or an anxiety condition can really be managed better if you seek kind of medical advice and, you know, from a doctor and pharmaceuticals. And I have no negative feeling towards that. I don't think that I would have coped as well as I have if I hadn't had that support. And also, you know, it's just a thing, you know, that I realized I've come to understand that that's what I need in my life to be okay. So it's accepting all these things, you know, that I'm not perfect. I have to be on medication. I have to do certain things in order to manage my life. And it takes courage. It takes courage, I think.
Yeah, it's nice, isn't it? Like if you had diabetes and had to go to the doctor for insulin, or if you broke your ankle and you had to go and get it strapped, maybe have some painkillers for a few days, no one bats an eyelid. But as soon as you're doing it for a psychosomatic reasons, is that the right word? Psychological reason. Psychosomatic, the opposite. Is that when it's pretend?
Psychosomatic is when you think that it's something that you don't have, or there's
So when you actually do have a reason to take it, there definitely is, or was at least, more of a stigma around it than there is today. And it's it is funny. I saw a great meme once of if people treated mental health the way they treat physical health, and it was someone kind of you know, just sitting in their, now what was it? it was just people giving really unhelpful advice to people with mental health conditions, like, have you just tried feeling better? That sort of thing. You know,
like go for a walk, or if you're yeah. like anxious, you know, just they say just go and have a coffee or just breathe or something. You know, it's the stuff that just it isn't the case.
The kind of stuff we tell my daughters to do. You know, take a few deep breaths, blow out the candles. One, two, three, and
that is very valuable advice. You can start teaching your kids that, definitely. I actually use a box breathing technique, so you breathe. And I've mentioned it to a few people. So you breathe in for the count of four. You breathe out for the count of four. Sorry. You breathe in for the count of four. You hold for the count of four. You breathe out for the count of four. And then you're just still for the count of four. So you actually do a box in your mind. But, you know, the stillness is important because we can all breathe in, hold, and breathe out. But it's the being still for four that helps. So if we can teach your kids to start doing that as a way, as a go-to, to actually create some stability and to get, as I say, stop, observe, and steer, then that is, you know, that is a great, great learning.
Well, thank you.
You're doing good. You're doing good, it sounds like.
I can live for a year off a good compliment, Nikki, so thanks for that. I appreciate it. I'll cancel next week's podcast in case I don't get any good feedback. No, that's amazing, and thank you for that. And box breathing is something that I've used a lot in the past. If I'm struggling, if I can't get my thoughts out of my head when it's time for sleep, I'll box breathe in bed and get told off by my wife, what are you doing? you know, are you okay? Why are you doing that? And it's all good. But no, super great advice today. Thank you so much. And Hiding in the Open, Living Sensitively is your book. Could you just give us the sort of the blurb for the book as to the outcomes that we'll hope to find? When we read it?
So the book is, as I said, My Journey with Mental Illness. Covers the various conditions that one may suffer from or think that they have. The outcome is really to let people understand that we're all in the same boat. We're all in the same boat. Some people's views are different, but we're all in the same boat. And that, you know, my experience is trying to show up in the world in a way didn't help me. I had to find ways that worked for survival. And I literally mean that. It was a life and death situation for me. And I had to find a way in order to manage every single day in order to want to live, which was tricky. So the information and the advice and the words is really my experience on survival. And how it's actually a lot easier attained than one would think.
Love that. Love that. That's great. I love the use of the word tricky. Tricky is another word we use with the girls an awful lot of the time. It's just a bit tricky, buddy. So, hey, this is
there's another word you can use, and that's prickly.
Prickly.
Because if she's, I like sometimes I'll say to my partner, I'll say, I'm feeling prickly. But she gives him a heads up to say, listen, I actually can't engage. Let her give her some space. I just say I'm prickly, like a pear, prickly pear. It's being able to verbalize things in the context, perhaps, of your child's, you know, world. And I don't know.
Yeah, no, I love that. And thank you for the hour of free parental coaching as well.
Mine are 21 and 22, so you know, right. they seem to okay.
That's a small gap, Nikki. 21 and 22.
Yeah, goodness. Well, it's 6 months. My son was nearly 6 months when I fell pregnant again.
Well, there you go. Well done, you. Well done. That sounds harder than twins. People say twins, how do you do it? I think newborn and a toddler sounds way worse.
You know what? My kids started getting into sync. So my son regressed and my daughter kind of, at one stage, they're both in bottles. So they call them Irish twins.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's the same thing. Like, so I'm a twin with a brother. And interestingly enough, I mean, he suffers from bipolar. I hope he doesn't see this. I haven't got his permission to mention, but it's in my book.
No one sees this podcast. It's all good. Same six listeners every week, and we're happy with that. So
fantastic.
No, amazing.
I'll be one of them.
Please do. Well, we will be sharing this in various formats, full length on YouTube, all the podcasting platforms. We'll clip up some of this stuff as well. We'll put some links out to the book, which is really exciting stuff. And
have you seen the book?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've seen the book. Show us the book. Yes, I love the book. It looks like the cover of a novel. It's a very cool cover. It's not the normal sort of coaching book that you see.
No,
you know?
And it's not really a coaching. So it's hiding in the open, living sensitively.
Yeah, 100%. And once again, I'm not a, I don't try to pretend I've read the books in my bookshelf behind me because I don't read any books ever. But this feels like one that would be good to have in our house, actually, to help us to see how, just for my daughter, and also kind of a little bit my wife and myself, as we are more honest with ourselves about, you know, just the stuff that is the way it is and how we're just going to have to deal with things day to day, like anything in life, you know, no more hiding. So, Nikki, thank you so much for being on the show today. Really lovely. And I think we could manage to do another hour, but we will not. We will. Wanting more.
We'll just end it here. Okay.
I've even wanting more. Yeah, you go to Pilates. Core strength is very important. You know, all you new mothers out there, core strength, massive. My wife's hips are all messed up because of holding a baby on the hip. Now her back's all messed up.
Yeah.
Super sore lower back. I've had a tight upper back for 3 years straight. It's incredible the things these kids mess you up, right?
Yeah, apparently it's beneficial in the long run. It's a payback scheme, yeah, apparently.
Yeah, my parents say that having grandchildren is the reward for having children.
That's a very good way to put it.
That's what they say.
I hope I've got a long time to wait until that happens for me, but I have a friend who's also, and but twins, so it's tricky, but fun.
It's prickly sometimes. It gets a bit prickly now and then. Yeah. So thank you again, Nikki Sachs. Anyone watching or listening, we do love you for that. I'll be back next week with another episode of Coaches to the Moon. Until then, thank you so, so much for being here. Love you for that. And much love. Peace out. Hey, guys, I really hope you enjoyed today's episode. Thank you so much for sticking around to the end. If you love our guests, then in the show notes of this episode, you can find their socials, you can follow them, you can learn more about all the free resources and programs they've got. I highly recommend you do it. Until then, thank you so much. I'll be back here next week with Coaches to the Moon. Have an amazing day. Peace out.
Coaches to the Moon will be back next week. Until then, reach us on Facebook at To The Moon Digital Marketing.